And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, hello there. Good afternoon. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Open talk to begin the program today. We're going to chat a little bit later with historian and author Craig Shirley about the mother of George Washington. Mary Ball Washington was her name. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the program. Open talk right now, though, on this Friday. It's nice to have sunshine, huh? Although it's quite windy, and the weather folks told us early this morning, even before dawn, that it was going to get very windy and gusty today. And if you haven't been outside yet, it really is. Right now, we've got winds close to 20 miles an hour whipping in out of the west. But we do have sunshine, and the temperature's not bad. We're right around 50 degrees, down a little bit from what we had this morning. How about yesterday afternoon? Did you get a chance to step outside for a while yesterday? 63 degrees here in Butler yesterday afternoon with sunshine. And we needed a day like that, given all the news of yesterday. And more today. Are you settling down a little bit with this COVID-19 coronavirus? We're never going to be comfortable with it, and with all of the limitations that we now have on daily life and all of the postponements and the cancellations and everything, but maybe you've settled down a little bit now after yesterday and the day before. It was just one headline after another with things being canceled and postponed, and something we would never have dreamed of just a few days ago. The start of this week, last Monday, we were talking about the beautiful full moon, the the worm moon, the super moon. Who knew what was coming as we hit the middle and the end of the week, huh? Wow. And we have more news, you know, as you've just heard today. For example, Quality Life Services, they operate 10 nursing homes and personal care facilities. They are restricting visitation now. Family and friends prohibited from visiting these facilities. They don't have any confirmed cases of coronavirus, but, you know, they're worried. And how can you blame them, given what happened up in Seattle, which is probably the worst outbreak, the deadliest outbreak of coronavirus so far in this country, with several people dead at nursing homes up there. So, and I'm sure we'll see more of this. Butler High School has postponed its spring musical, which was originally scheduled for next weekend. We were scheduled to chat with some of the students this coming Monday, but we'll postpone that too, of course. They will be still doing the musical. In fact, I talked on the phone today myself with Dale Van Lanningham, who's the director of the musical, and he says, we're going to do it. No question about that. We just don't know when, and it's not going to be next weekend. And I would imagine we'll continue to see these cancellations and postponements. Who knows how long. Hard to believe how the sports world has shut down. But when you think about it, that makes sense. I mean, I've heard people talking that this is overkill, you know, that we've gone overboard with these closings and cancellations and yada, yada. In the sports world, I don't think so, because these professional athletes and college athletes, they travel all over the place. You know, professional teams from the East Coast to the West Coast, North, South, whether it's basketball or hockey or whatever. And even the college athletes, I mean, they go all over the place, too, to play. So they're coming in contact with, who knows, you know, certainly far more than most of us who regularly stay fairly close to home. So I can understand that. It's kind of strange, though, to think no more spring training games. Baseball, the Pirates were scheduled to open on March 26th. That was 2 weeks from yesterday, but that's not going to happen. Opening of the baseball season delayed by at least 2 weeks. Who knows? Maybe more. Well, I hope that we're not quite as anxious today, at least. Yesterday was a bizarre, surreal day as we continued to digest this news. Open Talk, we can talk about that if you want, or anything. Open Talk, 283-2525, the number. Let's go to the people. Hi, caller. This is Dave Mulrike. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. I was not surprised to see or to hear about sports cancellations. I'm sure you saw that there's a professional basketball player who playfully touched all kinds of things at a conference, at a media conference, and then it turns up the man is positive for coronavirus.
Yeah, I have seen the video of that. It was a Utah Jazz player,
right,
National Basketball Association, and he was doing a sit-down interview after a game, which they do after pretty much all professional sports games. And after he got up, he started to walk away, and then he comes back, and he touches the microphone, the table, and a bunch of other stuff, and ha, ha, ha. That was a few days ago. And then it turns out he's positive for the coronavirus.
Right, as well as one of his teammates. I'm not familiar with it. I saw the information on the news, and I thought, well, for those people who are taking this overly lightly, maybe you should rethink your situation. And I believe, Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, his wife has tested positive.
That's correct, yes.
And there's somebody in Miami, I believe, that has tested positive. He was at Mar-a-Lago, and he tested positive. And so, and you think, well, these folks are far away from us, they're not intermingling with us, but then you don't know who has been where and who is irresponsible. There was a passenger on an airline, and he told the attendant on the airline that he had tested positive. He was wearing a mask. Wow, great. His wife were on the plane, and they disembarked and told the attendant that they had tested positive from wherever they were coming to the U.S.
Thanks a lot. By the way, the guy you're referring to at Mar-a-Lago is the president of Brazil, and there's a picture. I just saw a picture of him on the web yesterday, standing between President Trump and Vice President Pence. They were standing right next to each other.
And then the president is making light of it. Oh, no, I don't need to be tested. Well, maybe he's being tested behind the scenes and he's not admitting to it. I know he doesn't always tell the truth.
You know, I have wondered that same thing, whether they, in fact, were tested. They're just not making it public. I thought that myself. I can't imagine he wouldn't be tested, for goodness sakes. The guy they're standing right next to at a dinner,
right,
has tested positive. Well,
exactly.
Hey, thanks for the call. Good to talk with you today.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Sure. So long. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Open Talk. The sale of AK Steel has closed. It was scheduled to close today. It was announced last year, and it was a shocker to everybody around here, the Butler area. Another company, Cleveland Cliffs, a company I never heard of before, was planning to buy AK Steel. And the closing date was today, and it has happened. The $3 billion deal has closed. So a new owner of AK Steel. And boy, everybody's keeping their fingers crossed around here that plant stays open, right? Let's go back to the people, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering if you know if the Herman fish fry is called off.
You're talking about at St. Mary of the Assumption in Herman?
Yes.
I personally don't know whether we've heard from them or not. I haven't heard anything myself. I know okay. that St. Fidelis in Meridian, they're still on. They're just for takeouts, though. They're not having any sit-down dinners.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Sure. We have a list of postponements and cancellations and that sort of thing because, you know, we've been getting a lot of calls. It's on our master website, butlerradio.com. And if you go to that website, it's very easy. There's a banner right at the top with cancellations and postponements. So you can click on that, and that'll give you the up-to-date list. And we adjust that every time we get word of something else that's been postponed or canceled. So butlerradio.com. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk. 283-2525. I'm interested if anybody remembers what happened on this day. March 13th. 27 years ago today. No, it wasn't a Friday the 13th. That's today, by the way. Friday the 13th, if you're superstitious. No, but it was March 13th. It was a Saturday that year. March 13th, 1993. Anybody remember what happened that day? I'll give you a hint. If you wanted to have a snowball fight, you were in the right place. That was the day of the Great Blizzard. The Blizzard of 93. It's hard to believe that was 27 years ago. My goodness. Wow. Second biggest snowfall recorded ever here in western Pennsylvania. Second biggest. 26 inches? All in one day. All in one day. Today was the day. Hi there, caller. Whoops. Thought we had a call there. Guess not. Okay. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Now, the reason that I remember it was a Saturday, it was the day of the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Pittsburgh. And I was scheduled to march in the parade that day and started down to Pittsburgh. We didn't know that it was going to be that bad, you know. I started down to Pittsburgh early in the morning. On that Saturday, it was snowing. But the closer I got to Pittsburgh, the worse it got. And, I mean, it was coming down 2-3 inches an hour. And it was a very heavy, wet snow. And I can remember very well, I'm coming down the Parkway North, coming into Pittsburgh, you know, and that's, as you get close to Pittsburgh, it's like 6 lanes of traffic. I'm thinking, I'm going to go home. You can't turn around. So I drove across the Veterans Bridge, got off at 7th Street. That's the first exit. The parade was staging at the Civic Arena that year. I drove into the Civic Arena parking lot, made a U-turn, came right back out, never stopped, and cut right back on the 279, the Parkway North, and it took me 3.5 hours to get home from there. It was impossible driving. I started up 79, and then I was worried that somebody would hit me from behind because they couldn't see me. So I got off and got on Route 19, you know, figuring people wouldn't be going as fast. But I had to stop. Oh, I don't know how many times I had to stop and pull off because my windshield wipers clogged up. That snow was so heavy and so fast and furious. I was never so happy to get home again. And I still think back on that. What an idiot I was to head out to Pittsburgh. But again, we didn't know it was going to be that bad, you know. 27 years ago today, the Blizzard of 93. It was the second biggest snowfall on record here in Pennsylvania. And the records go back to like 1880 or something like that. There wasn't a National Weather Service before that, so, you know, it's possible we could have had a bigger snowfall back in 1522 or something like that, but nobody knows. It was the second biggest. The biggest single snowstorm was Thanksgiving of 1950. Thanksgiving of 1950. I've seen pictures of that, and it was all over western Pennsylvania. Got blanketed, and that was 28 inches, I think, something like that. But that came over a weekend. It wasn't all in one day, like the blizzard of 93. It was 2 days over Thanksgiving weekend, 1950. Back to the phones we go. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. I remember the blizzard of 93. It was nasty.
It sure was. 27 years ago today. Can you believe it was that long ago? Wow.
Oh, I thought it was 27 years ago yesterday. Maybe I'm wrong.
March 13th.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yep. Were you out in it?
Yes, I was. My nephew, my brother, my sister, and I, we couldn't even go anywhere.
Yeah, once it stopped snowing and we got into the afternoon and evening hours, everything just shut down. I mean, roads were closed, turnpike was closed, stores were closed, nothing was open. It was total isolation.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Thanks, my friend. Good to talk with you today.
Hey, nice talking to you. Thank you.
Sure, sure. So long. The blizzard of 93. It wasn't particularly cold that day. But sometimes that's when you can get a very rapidly accumulating snow, you know, because you get that wet snow as opposed to a dry, powdery snow that tends to blow around and not accumulate quite as much or quite as quickly. This was about as heavy and wet as you can get it. As I told you, my windshield wipers clogged up. They just wouldn't go. They weren't frozen. They just clogged up with snow. What a day that was. Saturday, March 13th, 1993. Well, this is Friday the 13th, so what about that superstition? Are you big on that? I've never really given it much concern for a lot of folks, you know, if you're superstitious. It's strange. I looked up Friday the 13th to see where the superstition comes from. It's actually just a tradition in some Western countries, especially in the United States. In some other countries, no big deal. In Spanish-speaking countries, and also in Greece, it's Tuesday the 13th. That is unlucky for people. I never knew that. Ooh, Tuesday the 13th. And in Italy, it's Friday the 17th. Although any Friday in Italy right now is unlucky because they're on total lockdown from the coronavirus. And did you hear about that? They had even more shutdowns in Italy yesterday. Earlier in the week, they'd closed all shops other than supermarkets and drugstores, pharmacies. And then yesterday, they closed churches. Shut them down. St. Peter's Basilica, the largest church in the world, closed. Can't go in. How'd you like to have a vacation planned to Rome and not be able to get into St. Peter's? I've seen pictures of on TV and online of St. Peter's Square, which is really round. It's not a square, but it's a huge square in front of St. Peter's Basilica, hardly a soul in there. Same with the Colosseum, which is usually packed with tourists. It's one of, you know, if you're in Rome, it's one of the places where you must stop. Nobody there. Nobody there. Italy, the biggest crackdown of any country that we know of now. We're not quite sure what's going on in China. They say that the coronavirus has peaked there. Don't know. But Italy, then, you know, they have no problem releasing what's going on and shutting down. Germany's pretty hard hit. They're worried in France. Ireland has been pretty hard hit. The Prime Minister of Ireland yesterday closed all schools, universities, colleges, and childcare centers, all of them, across the nation, shut down. By the way, the Prime Minister of Ireland was in the White House yesterday. Yeah, well, the Irish Prime Minister traditionally delivers a big bowl of shamrocks to the U.S. President. I don't know when that started. Goes back as far as I can remember. It's a photo op. That's all it is. But I saw a clip of President Trump on TV last evening, and he was sitting in the White House, and I saw the bowl of shamrocks there off to the side. So I said, well, the Irish Prime Minister must be there. And then a little bit later in the interview, the camera pulled back, and he was sitting there, Leo Varadkar. 283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk here on the It's Your Turn program today, Friday the 13th. What are some other superstitions? Black cat crossing your path? Breaking a mirror? Not a good idea anyway. You could badly cut them. Walking under a ladder? You should never do that, whether it's Friday the 13th or not. And then there's opening an umbrella indoors. I've never understood that one. What sense does that make? Sometimes if you come in, you know, after a rainstorm and you're in the mudroom of your house or in the foyer or whatever, you got to open and shut the umbrella to shake the rain off, right? Shake the water off. I've never understood that one. And where did the superstition about Friday the 13th come from? There are a number of myths and stories and legends. One of them has to do with the Last Supper, that there were 13 people around that Passover table, Jesus and the 12 apostles. But how that came to be a superstition, I don't know. 283-2525, our number. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello.
Hi. How you doing? You're on the air. Go right ahead.
I had a question. When do you think the coronavirus is going to hit Western PA?
I don't know. I'm fairly certain that it will. I don't know how we could possibly avoid it. Do you?
No.
I mean,
I was just wondering.
It's in eastern Pennsylvania now. It's up to 22 cases, but it's all along from Philadelphia north, you know, like right up the Delaware River Valley. But I did see yesterday that Ohio has been hard hit. In fact, the governor of Ohio shut down all the schools yesterday. And one particularly big pocket of it is northeastern Ohio, which is right on the border with western Pennsylvania. So I can't imagine that we could possibly escape it. But when? Who knows? What do you think about the precautions that are being taken? Do you think people are overreacting? Do you think they're going overboard at this point?
Maybe a little bit, I'd say.
Well, better safe.
I see some people wearing masks and stuff. And
better safe
going
than sorry.
Crazy, buying a bunch of groceries.
Yeah, but if you didn't take some of these precautions and then we ended up with people dying, then people would say, why didn't you take more precautions? You know.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Good to talk with you, my friend. Thanks. 283-2525, our number. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. I just wanted to follow up on this coronavirus, what you're talking about.
Yeah. What do you know?
Probably don't know a lot more than other people, but one thing I do know is we are very unprepared to test for this stuff.
Well, that's true.
I mean, it's been on the news constantly, and our president says, oh, we're doing such a great job, and we're doing this. And, you know, he's always tooting his own horn. You know, I mean, if he was in an automobile going down Main Street, that's all you'd hear is the horn. You know, I just get so sick of him bragging and blowing, and we're not prepared. In the United States of America, I would have thought we would have been best prepared. We don't even have the needle manufacturers in here enough to supply us.
We have nowhere near the test kits that we need. You're correct.
We don't have near the drugs. When they do come, most of the drugs are coming from China and overseas, you know, to even make the drugs. I mean, I'm so disgusted with the United States, the way they let themselves go. You know, the last 50 years, it's ridiculous. Just so the companies could make more money overseas, the big shots, you know. And now if they tell you if you have younger people, I mean, I'm retired. The younger people have 401K, they lose the money. Where are they going to get the extra money if they're slowing down their jobs to put it back into a 401K? I mean, I just think our country's in bad shape, and I think coronavirus could be here already in Pittsburgh and everywhere else, but we're not testing enough people.
I think that's a real possibility. There are already cases here. We just don't know it, you know?
Yeah, we just don't know it. I mean, the president's sitting beside people and in office, and, you know, he had to have been tested for it after he knew the people next to him was had it.
I can't
and he
imagine.
Doesn't yeah. tell the truth.
I
guess, sir, he's going to pass some kind of Powers Act where he has more power later today. I can't think what that's called. I heard it on the news a little bit ago.
Well, we'll see.
And, well, Dave, have a good one. Hopefully we'll get through this.
I hope so, too. I hope things calm down over the weekend, huh?
I kind of doubt it. Unless it's fake news.
Good to talk with you. Thanks, my friend.
You too.
Thank you. 283-2525. Caller, thanks for your patience and waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello, Dave.
Hi.
I'm calling about the hysteria with the coronavirus
mm-hmm.
deal.
Yes.
To me, it seems the coronavirus is nothing more than what we have each year in our common flu virus. The flu virus, on average, kills 35,000 people a year. Now, in this country, this coronavirus has killed nowhere near that. So I have a hard time believing that it's any more severe than the average flu that you would treat with your over-the-counter medications.
Well, I would say two things. I'm not obviously a medical professional, but it seems to be transmitted much more easily and more rapidly than the common flu. I mean, we've never seen whole countries like this in a matter of days be quarantined like Italy is right now. You know, that's never happened with the flu.
Well, as far as the quarantine thing, even for the average flu, I think that's only common sense.
Well, I would agree with you on that. If you got the flu, stay away from everybody else, you know.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to get my few words in on that.
Well, that's what we do on this program, so I'm glad.
Okay, Dave.
Glad you shared your thoughts with us. Thanks.
Okay, have a good weekend.
And you.
Bye.
Take a break. Back with more of the Friday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR after these words. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Folks, you talk about tradition. You realize Miller's Shoes has been in downtown Butler for well over 120 years now? Yeah, that's tradition. That's staying power. Miller's Shoes, your headquarters for shoes for all members of the family. If you're looking for athletic shoes, they've got them for men, women, teens, kids, and they've got all the famous brands, too, right there under one roof. Miller's Shoes has Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Asics, ProPet, and more. Athletic shoes for the whole family. They've also got Rockport shoes and Trotters and Hush Puppies and many other famous name brands as well. Easy Spirit. And they're your local headquarters for America's favorite comfort shoes, SAS. You'll find them for men and women in a variety of styles and colors at Miller's Shoes. You can always count on that great Miller's fit, too. And a friendly smile from the Ciprians. Miller's Shoes, headquarters for shoes for the entire family. 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Miller's Shoes. We will have time for more open talk on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Boy, Monday, huh? Was there ever a week that we were happier to get to the end of it than this week? What a week it has been. Oof. I would echo the thoughts of that last caller. Have a good weekend. Well, we're scheduled to talk with our guest coming up here in just a moment or so. What do you know about George Washington's mother? Did you know they had a mother? Of course, right. But not much known about her. Her name was Mary Ball Washington. Craig Shirley, historian, lecturer, has researched this, and he will talk about it coming up here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after this quick break.
The deals at Tobacco for Less just keep getting better and better. Their stores now include a great loyalty program for valued customers that can help you save on your purchases. Each dollar spent at Tobacco for Less will earn a point. And once you hit 200 points, you can redeem $10 off any purchase of $25 or more. Stock up on their various tobacco products, explore the cigar selection in their walk-in humidor, or check out the great CBD products in their health and wellness department. For all your smoking and vaping needs, visit Tobacco for Less in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
On the It's Your Turn program next year on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're going to be chatting with guest Craig Shirley, who visits with us by telephone. Mr. Shirley is the author of a newly released book called Mary Ball Washington, The Untold Story of George Washington's Mother. Craig, nice to meet you. Great to have you with us for a few minutes here on the program today.
Thank you, Dave, very, very much.
I never even knew the name of George Washington's mother. Has she been written about very much by historians here in this country?
Not really, and that's part of the reason why I wrote the book, Dave, is that there were a few thin books written about her in the years after she passed away in 1783, but they were basically hagiographies. There weren't many facts that went in, and they treated her as if she was, you know, Mary, the mother of Jesus. After the Civil War, American literature took a turn for the more, what was called the reality era, or the era of reality books, and Moby Dick and Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. It was more grinding, more real, more earthy. And the literature about her took a decided turn for the worse. So before the Civil War, she was depicted as some kind of like a June Cleaver. And after the war, she was depicted as Joan Crawford. Neither was true. And these, again, were very, very slim books, were very, very thinly researched. And even modern Flexner and James Flexner, who wrote a many volumes set on George Washington, portrayed Mary as being very, very shrewish and harsh and domineering and all this. And even Ron Chernow, in his recent book on Washington, gave short shrift to Mary. So I decided to go back and really look at the woman, and went through letters and archival information and various sundry other material, and I came up with a picture of a woman who was much more complex and complicated than people gave her credit for. First of all, is that she was, this is why the book would resonate, I think, with most people today, is that she was a single mother raising six children in her 30s. Her husband, Augustine, had died when George was just 11. George, of course, was the oldest. And she was left alone to raise these six children. She had help, you know, in terms of some slaves, things like that, but no house servants per se. She was definitely upper middle class, but she wasn't wealthy by the aristocratic standards of the day. And also, she lived in a century that was not very hospitable to women. Women, of course, didn't have the vote in the 1800s. But also, they couldn't really technically own property. Their job was to take the property that their husband their husbands would leave behind after they passed away, and then turn it over to their eldest sons when they reached the age, when they reached majority. Hmm. So her job was to take, like, Ferry Farm, which Augustine left in his will for George. She was to be the caretaker of it until George turned 18 and then, or 21, depending on the local laws and customs of the time, and give it to George. So to me, I think she was a fascinating figure of history, and she deserved better than she's gotten in the last 250 years.
I'm assuming her maiden name was Mary Ball, is that right?
Yes. She was from the Millenbeck and Epping Forest area of the Northern Neck. The Balls were prominent in the Northern Neck of Virginia, were prominent in that area, and they're still somewhat prominent here today. There's still Ball descendants in the Northern Neck and in the Middle Peninsula. So, yes, her maiden name was Ball. The Ball family was fairly prominent in England, was fairly prominent coming over here. Of course, she went through trauma herself because in the first 11 years of life, she lost her mother, she lost her father, she lost her stepbrother, and she lost her stepfather in the first 11 years. So she knew the reality of the human existence at a very early age.
It was quite common for women, in particular, to marry young back in those days, in the 1700s. Did she, in fact, marry young, too?
Yes, married young, but not as a teenager. As I recall, she something in her early 20s is when she married.
I had no idea that she had six children. I can remember reading, I'm not particularly well-read on George Washington, but I remember reading that he had a half-brother. I didn't know that there were...
Yes, that was Lawrence. That was from his father's first marriage to Jane, through which she produced several children, including Lawrence, who was George's adored older half-brother. Lawrence was, in many ways, a role model and inspiration for the young George Washington because his father died. But Mary not only had six children, she had six children in something like 9 years.
Oh, my God.
And they all lived to adulthood, except for Mildred, the youngest. She died in infancy. But the other five all lived to not ripe old ages. George, of course, was 67 when he died. His brother Samuel was 62 when he died. But they all lived to adulthood.
We're talking, if you joined us a few minutes late, listeners, on this segment of It's Your Turn, we're talking with Craig Shirley, author of a newly released biography of Mary Ball Washington, the untold story of George Washington's mother. There was one incident that you talk about in your book that is quite fascinating. It had to do with a lightning strike at a home where I believe Mary was hosting a friend. Can you tell us about that story, Craig?
Sure. It was. And of course, it was the resulted in her lifetime fear of storms and electrical storms. And of course, why wouldn't it? She was dining at a table during apparently a terrible electrical storm. A bolt of lightning. Of course, this was before lightning rods were common on houses, before Benjamin Franklin invented the lightning rod to attract attention, to dissipate it into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck the house, came down through the house, and killed her dinner companion, and it was such a terrible force that it actually fused the silverware into her companion's hands when she was killed.
I'm interested in the relationship between Mary Ball Washington and her oldest son, George. Do we know for sure whether they whether they got along. I mean, here we are in the holiday season, Craig, and I don't have to tell you that family politics sometimes gets in the way of holiday.
Family politics is now dominates every family gathering, and my family's no exception, and your family's probably no exception either. We just live in a day and age of contentious arguments and discussions. She and George, it's clear that she loved him. It's clear that he loved her. He always addressed his letters to Mary as honored madam. And there were moments of tenderness between the two of them. But she was also very, very demanding, especially about her monthly allowance from George. She needed that money to survive because, after Augustine died, she had no means of real income except for the income from the various farms, which was more agricultural than it was actually hard cash. And he was sometimes very, very frustrated with her and expressed it in his letters and in his writings. And yet he was a very dutiful son, although, interestingly enough, during the 7 years of the American Revolution, there's no record that he ever wrote her a letter, although he wrote many, many letters to Martha. There's also some evidence that Martha and Mary didn't get along, and that Mary did not go to their wedding. But we don't know if she didn't go because she didn't like Martha, or because of the distance involved, or the weather, or something else like that. We just don't know. But she did not attend. Nor did she attend, by the way, George's inauguration in Washington, or in New York City. But that would have been difficult, given the distance between Fredericksburg and New York City, and her advanced age, and her the state of her health, which was not good. So they got along, but it was a very, very complicated relationship. She clearly invested all of her emotion, all of her love, in her eldest, in George, and I don't know if she saw greatness in him, because when he did great things, she kind of shrugged her shoulders and said, "Well, George is supposed to do those things." I think he was like most sons, that he was on a lifetime, but ultimately fruitless quest to try to please his mother.
There are some histories that suggest that she was a very strong supporter of the crown, of the Tories.
What we have to do, Dave, is to put ourselves in her shoes in the 1750s, 1760s, 1770s, as the revolution was fomenting, because it was in slow motion. You know, we just didn't throw tea into the Boston Harbor and then declare a revolution. It took time before the Intolerable Acts, the Townsend Acts, the various acts over 10, 15, 20 years for the revolution to be brought to a boil. So she grew up a British subject. She grew up believing in the divine right of kings and the divinity of King George II and King George III. She attended the Anglican Church, which was the Church of England. She was, in every way, a British subject. And this is the world in which she was born, the world that she was comfortable with, the world in which she lived. And then to ask her at, say, the age of 60, 70 years old, said, "Mary, forget everything you learned before. It's all wrong. You need now look at the world through a different paradigm." This would have been, culturally shocking for a lot of people, and this explains why there were a lot of Tory sympathizers here in the United States all during the Revolution. Even Benjamin Franklin's son was imprisoned as a Tory spy. So it was not the clean cut, direct line that a lot of people imagined the Revolution was. It was very, very. There were conflicts, and there were people who were openly disdainful of Washington and the American Revolution, who were openly supportive of the British and King George III. Mary never actively undermined her son, but neither did she. The best evidence is that neither did she do anything to actively help him either. There was one account of French soldiers marching through Fredericksburg, having a chance encounter with Mary, and then one of them wrote later that there was no doubt about that she was a Tory sympathizer. And then there are some other contemporaneous accounts too, which suggest that she was a Tory sympathizer. But it's understandable given the world in which she had been immersed for the first 60, 70 years of her life.
Well, and we have to remember too, and I know from talking with some local historians, Craig, here in western Pennsylvania, George Washington came into western Pennsylvania in the 1750s.
The Whiskey Rebellion.
Even before that, whenever Virginia claimed what's now western Pennsylvania, and they were trying to get the French out, Governor, I believe it was Dinwiddie, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's correct. The French and Indian Wars before the American Revolution, that's right. Pennsylvania and down in the Ohio Valley.
And Washington, who was young at the time, only in his mid-20s,
he
wanted to get a commission in the British Army.
And before that, he wanted to join the British Navy, and his mother talked him out of it. But that's the proof of my point, is that he himself viewed himself as a British subject.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about Washington after he became president. I did not know this until I saw your book. It was George Washington who came up with the very title of Mr. President. Apparently there was a debate about what to call the president.
John Adams and a group of the framers were in Philadelphia as the Constitution was being drafted, and they spent long days trying to come up with a title. You know, His Honor, the Plenipotentiary. He who walks on water. I mean, these long protracted titles. His Excellency, the Honorable. Great God of America, and Washington just got sick of all this tomfoolery, and he told Adams, and he said, "Look, the title is Mr. President. That's it, okay?" And that was it. That was it.
Did Mary Washington ever remarry after the death of Augustine?
No, she never did, and she would have been an attractive widow, because Martha herself was a widow when she married. When she married George, she was quite wealthy. She was a member of the upper class, and that's how George actually entered the upper classes of Virginia society, by marrying Martha. But no, she never got remarried. She had financial assets. She was by no means rich, but she was comfortable. But there's no indication whatsoever of any innocent flirtations or any suitors, any interest, anything like that. After Augustine had passed away,
when George was in his youth, the Washingtons lived in Fredericksburg, near Fredericksburg, Virginia, on a dairy farm. How did he end up at Mount Vernon? Was that Martha's property that he got whenever he married her?
No, I beg your pardon. No, it was actually it was his brother's, his stepbrother, Lawrence. It was Little Hunting Creek, which was originally the name of the property, which is owned by Augustine, which later passed to Lawrence. Lawrence renamed it after Edward Vernon, who had served under in the British Navy. He so admired Vernon, he renamed it Mount Vernon. It had been Little Hunting Creek. And then when Lawrence passed away at an early age, in the late 20s, early 30s, his daughter acquired it. And then later, George acquired it from Lawrence's daughter, and that became his famed home and residence for the rest of his life.
Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby's not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice, located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available, also prescription diets. One of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South at Thorncrest Drive.
When planning a funeral, should cremation be considered? That subject comes up a lot these days, and Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler can help to answer your many questions about cremation. Is it appropriate for your family? Should there be an actual funeral service, keeping in mind that it's a time to celebrate the meaningful life of your loved one? And of course, we look at the bottom line. What's the cost? Thompson Miller's cremation program offers three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's all performed locally here in Butler. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. Let's talk it over privately right here at Thompson Miller. We've been serving the Butler community for more than 90 years. A third generation of the same family is here for you. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, because we care.
Talking with Craig Shirley, author of Mary Ball Washington, The Untold Story of George Washington's Mother. I'm struck by the fact that you mentioned earlier in our conversation, Craig, that George always addressed his mother as Honored Madam. That seems very
madam.
Distant. Was that the custom in the day, or was it just because they weren't really that close?
I think it says two things. I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think it suggests their lack of closeness, personal warmth, but it also suggested his respect for her. There was a style of writing in the era with highfalutin words and clauses and dependent clauses, and you read this writing about of flowery things, of intentions and desires and wants, and are they ever going to land this thing? But eventually they do. But it was certainly a way of writing, a way of expressing oneself, a way of talking, a way of communicating that is absolutely foreign to our, even though it's the same language. It's absolutely foreign to our current use of the English language.
You mentioned that Mary Ball Washington, George, her oldest son, but she had six children over a period of 9 years. Infant mortality was very high back in those days. Did all of those kids survive?
All five of the six. The youngest, Mildred, died in infancy, but the other five survived at least into their 60s. Betty, Samuel, George, and the others all survived into their 60s. Hmm. So they didn't have complete lives the way we would define. But Mary did. Mary lived into her early 80s until she finally succumbed to breast cancer, which is still prominent in Ball family women even today. Here it is 300 years later. And Ball women, in fact, there was just a descendant, her name was Ball, who owns she owned an antique store over here in Lively, Virginia, on the Northern Neck, and she just passed away from breast cancer. So it remains a prominent, deadly disease in Ball family women, even today.
Still, if she lived into her 80s, boy, back in those days, that was a long life, wasn't it? Wow.
That was a very long life. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows exactly when she was born. Her birth was never recorded in a family Bible, and certainly not with the county or anything else like that. And nobody today knows where she's buried. She's buried somewhere in Fredericksburg, but nobody knows exactly where she's buried. But they do know when she died, and they estimate she was 83 when she died.
You mentioned Mary Ball Washington, George's mother, had really no contact with George Washington throughout the War of Independence. Were they ever able to reunite after the surrender of Yorktown?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, is that after the new government was formed, after the Articles of Confederation, after the new Constitution was adopted, and George was going to New York to assume the duties of becoming the first president of the United States. He made one final trip to Fredericksburg to see his mother and deliver the allowance to her. Now here he is, just like the President of the United States, and he's still delivering allowance to his mother. But he was a dutiful son, but he knew she was dying of breast cancer. She knew that she was dying of breast cancer. And there were two contemporaneous accounts, two letters of their last meeting. And it was, by all accounts, it was described as warm and tender, and that she gave him her blessings on the new venture of becoming the President of the United States. And when he found out, he was in New York, when he found out she had passed away, he went into a room by himself and was there for a number of hours just dealing with his grief at the loss of his mother. So at the end, whatever contretemps, whatever battles had gone on before were all laid to rest and set aside at the end, so that she died knowing that he loved her and that he had been a successful man, and he knew that he had done his best to please his mother.
I'm sure some people are thinking, well, wait a minute, Fredericksburg is not all that far from Washington, D.C. Surely he could have visited her a little more frequently. There was no Washington, D.C. then. The first capital of the United States was in New York.
Right. Yeah, there was no Washington, D.C. It was a swamp. it was New York City. It was Philadelphia. And for a time, the Continental Congress met in Baltimore. It wasn't only until Washington designated that area, Washington, D.C., that the nation's capital began to emerge.
Is it true that some of the founders wanted George Washington to go for a third term as president, and he refused?
There was a little bit of mention made of it, but he was resolute about not serving more than two terms. He thought that would be appropriate for any president. No president should accumulate too much power. And, of course, that became the standard until Franklin Roosevelt, mm-hmm. when Franklin Roosevelt ran for four terms. And, of course, to prevent that from ever happening again, the Republican Congress in 1953-54 amended the Constitution so that a president could only serve two terms.
Did George Washington live much longer after he left the presidency and went back to Mount Vernon?
No, not all that long. He lived for several years. I want to say two, 3 years. I don't have the exact dates in front of me, but he lived for two or three years afterward. By all accounts, it was a happy life. But he went out. It was a snowy, cold, wet December morning. He went out on horseback to inspect some fields, and he came in that afternoon not feeling very well, and reported that he was developing a fever, and he started getting a soreness in his throat, which we later know is strep throat. Later, it used to be called quinsy, but the doctors tried everything they could. Of course, modern medicine at the time was pretty prehistoric. They bled him, and they may have put leeches on him. And nothing would. I mean, obviously, the only thing that would cure it was antibiotics. But antibiotics were 150 years off, and so he finally, as your throat swells up, the breathing passages become blocked, and so that's how he passed away.
Ever since my mother and dad took my brother and I to Mount Vernon when we were kids, I've been fascinated by the life of George Washington. It sounds like you are too, Craig Shirley.
Oh, yes, very much so. I mean, I'm a Reagan biographer. I've written five books on Ronald Reagan. I work for Ronald Reagan, but George Washington remains a fascinating figure of history.
One final question. Do you think that George Washington's mother, Mary Ball Washington, has been treated fairly by historians down through the years?
No. No, she hasn't. She was treated too well in the immediate years after she passed away, and then after the Civil War, she was treated too badly. So I wanted to write this book to bring her back to center, so that everybody could have an honest, accurate look at the life and times of Mary Ball Washington. That's what I hope to have done, Dave.
The author is Craig Shirley. The book is Mary Ball Washington, The Untold Story of George Washington's Mother. Craig, nice to talk with you today. Thanks for spending some time with us here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Same to you, sir. So long now.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680.
Tasting defeat, loving that sweet.